Right now, let's kick things off. The Blue Jays were busy the last few days. They've made some moves, but what have they accomplished? We'll try and answer that question right now as we welcome in Keegan Matheson from MLB.com. Mr. Matheson, how are you, pal?
Doing well, Will. How you doing?
I'm okay, man. I guess the best place to start, we'll go all the way back to Sunday. Were you surprised the Blue Jays pulled the trigger on a Marcus Stroman trade days before Wednesday's deadline?
Yes. Yeah, that has not been their traditional way of operating, the Blue Jays. Whether it be at the trade deadline or even with other contractual deadlines you've reached through the offseason, they have preferred to wait as long as they can and gather as much info as you can and see all of the cards. And sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. And you're also risking that balance when you jump out in front of the market too. So I don't think the Blue Jays had any way of knowing that, you know, Trevor Bauer would be dealt in that type of deal. Any way of knowing that Syndergaard would not be moved, Bumgarner not moved. The way the market played out, I think, may have favored them a bit more later on, but they felt that this was the best deal they would get, pulled the trigger on it, and they liked the two young pitchers they got back in Kay and Woods Richardson, but without a top 100 name, without a big name coming back from Stroman, it's understandable some of the reaction you've seen.
Yeah, and I think that was the biggest thing, as you mentioned. Maybe they could have gotten more. They clearly liked this return and decided that I don't really care what we're going to get in a couple of days. This is what we like best. So tell us about the two players they got in return. I understand Anthony Kay made his AAA debut with the Bisons yesterday, but tell us about Anthony Kay and 18-year-old Simeon Woods Richardson, who the Blue Jays seem to be very high on.
So they represent a bit of a balance in this trade. Anthony Kay, I've kind of loosely compared him to a bit of a Ryan Barucki, just in terms of his value. A little different pitchers, both lefties, but a guy who maybe could be that number three, number four, is a smart pitcher on the mound, uses his pitch as well, isn't going to throw 98, but he works around the plate, can control the zone, and can be reliable. A really tough debut with AAA Buffalo last night, 11 hits, 6 runs allowed, but he should develop into a more consistent option. 24 years old already, so he could be close, maybe help out the Blue Jays pretty soon. In Simeon Woods Richardson, you have more of the lottery ticket. He was drafted last year out of high school as one of, maybe the youngest player in that draft class, and has tons of raw talent. He is the guy with that fastball that'll reach into the high 90s, with the good breaking ball that can develop. If you're looking for a guy down the road who could develop into an impactful starter, it's Woods Richardson. That being said, even if he does that by the time he's, let's say, 23, which is still early, we're looking down the road at 2023, 2024. So I know it's difficult to get excited about that, but I think Woods Richardson will be the player who, if the Blue Jays can come out even on this trade, it will be because of him.
Now, I guess before we move on from Marcus Stroman, a couple more on him. First of all, take us through what happened post-game Sunday, because I understand it was quite interesting outside the Blue Jay clubhouse.
It was. And so for the context for our listeners, after every game, as reporters, we go into the clubhouse, meet with, you know, typically the starter of the day or whoever made news. And obviously at that point, that was Marcus Stroman. And after that game, we were actually interviewing Eric Sogard, who had been traded to the Rays during that game. And a colleague of mine gave me a kind of an elbow in the scrum and held out his phone, and it said Stroman to the Mets. And I said, oh, my goodness. So let's politely wrap up this scrum respectfully and get down to the clubhouse. But we did not go into the clubhouse. It remained closed, which is not normal. And from outside, there was a bit of a commotion heard, and it was distant and muffled, not enough to make out names or words or anything, but obviously something was happening inside. And then Marcus left through a different door and exited through a stairwell. You know, we saw him just as he slipped past, but did not speak, you know, at the time. And it was certainly interesting. You know, a lot of drama, but also a little mystery there with what was going on. And it's, you know, understandably so, you know, a high emotion time, but it didn't sound like a celebration.
You go all the way back to spring training, even when Marcus held court with the media for 10, 12 minutes and kind of teed off a little bit on the organization, the front office. It sounds like some of that in the clubhouse was done again Sunday when he was dealt. Just overall, Keegan, I know it's probably not easy to do, but how would you summarize Marcus Stroman's tenure in Toronto?
A fireworks show. Certainly a fireworks show, and sometimes bigger than others. I know the relationship with the front office was clearly strained over these last few years, whether you look at his comments on arbitration, his tweet about not being told about Ryan Goins, that roster move, which, you know, front offices don't tell pitchers about utility man roster moves, but regardless, there have always been the jabs along the way. And then, like you mentioned, that first scrum this spring in Dunedin, I remember changing arms which arm I was putting a quarter in a few times, because it just kept going and going. It was, I think, 20 minutes, 22 minutes, and it was a very intentional 22 minutes of a monologue that had been thought about, I think, before. And he is very smart when it comes to those things. So this has been, an obvious end for a long time, and as those two sides have grown apart. But at the same time, on the field, Marcus Stroman has been the Blue Jays' best player. And in a time where teams like the Blue Jays are absolutely starved for pitching talent, he represented exactly that, you know, on the field. So he made life interesting, and I think for that, from a quote and post-game fireworks perspective, he will be missed.
Yeah, no doubt about it. He would be beloved in the media for that reason, because he was never afraid to speak whatever was on his mind. Keegan Matheson is our guest. He covers the Blue Jays and all things baseball for MLB.com. Let's shift gears now to two yesterday. During the game, Daniel Hudson dealt to Washington, and then right under the wire, they trade Aaron Sanchez and Joe Biagini to Houston in exchange for Derek Fisher, the 25-year-old who has been essentially a quad A guy for a long, long time. But the Blue Jays do like him. And the one word that I think a lot of fans are getting sick of is Ross Atkins talking about team control. He does have some control. But I guess overall, Keegan, were you with a lot of people in terms of trying to pick your jaw up off the floor when you saw it was essentially one asset coming back for Sanchez, Biagini, and a prospect outfielder?
Very surprised. And when the deal came across that it was Sanchez and Biagini and Cal Stevenson, the prospect, which really can't be understated. That's a legitimate outfield prospect, on base machine, Cal Stevenson. When the trade was reported as one player coming back and Derek Fisher, I definitely spent a while trying to figure out what else was coming back. Making calls and texts, trying to figure out what the second and third piece was. And I was curious as to why I couldn't find out. And, well, obviously because there was none. So it was surprising, just one piece coming back. But this is certainly the Blue Jays type of player. And they have been after Derek Fisher for some time now. It wouldn't surprise me, even back when they acquired Teoscar Hernandez, if Fisher was part of those talks as well, because it sounds like the interest really stretches back. But linking him to Hernandez, to Grichuk, to Billy McKinney, it's a lot of the same type here. Guys who are a little bit past their prospect type, a post-type guy who has some tools but hasn't really put it together in the major leagues yet. So even if Fisher pans out and reaches reasonable expectations, it's more of an incremental growth for the Blue Jays. You're not adding star power in a position where you're struggling. You're building just a bit higher. And eventually the Blue Jays need to build a lot higher. You know, they need to find that star impact talent. That's why I like that Simeon Woods Richardson addition, because there's at least the potential to be a real impact guy. But Fisher is more about depth and numbers, which, again, I know those are not what fans get excited about, or team control. I know the average fan is not home with their fingers out going 1, 2, 3, counting years of team control.
Yeah, they turned 14 into 42. Just ask Ross. Let's look at this trade, though, again, because a lot of people, too, not only upset with the return of Derek Fisher, but many also pondering and wondering why they dealt Aaron Sanchez. I know the last 3 weeks have been pretty good for him, but overall the last 3 years have not been ideal since he won the ERA title in 2016. He's had struggles with consistency. He struggled to stay healthy. It's very clear that not only was the return just a Derek Fisher because of who you gave up, like, it's clear that his value wasn't overly high on the trade market. Were you surprised that Aaron Sanchez did get moved yesterday?
You know, a month ago, I would have been very surprised, but some talk did pick up recently around the Blue Jays and around the league that he was very available and was likely to move, which surprised me when I heard it, but you keep hearing it over and over. And, you know, Aaron Sanchez, that 2016 season is the outlier for his entire career. And since then, I know he has dealt with the injuries, the lingering finger issues, but it's been 40-some starts, 250-some innings, I think, at this point. And eventually you need to see the results. So he's looked better the last couple of times out. But if you are an opposing GM, you have no problem poking holes in that value and viewing it through a more realistic lens. Because I know in Toronto and in Canada, you know, Aaron Sanchez, like a lot of former players here, is still viewed through that playoff lens or through his best season. But rival GMs don't see that. So I think the value there was low, and there is a question of, you know, why don't you hold on and try to rebuild him? But we'll see. It's going to be, I think, some nervous watching for the Blue Jays, because Houston is good at changing pitchers or helping them make a little tinker that sends them over the top. And Aaron Sanchez definitely has that value, that raw talent in there. And if Houston can find it, that's going to be tough to see if you're Toronto.
Just a few more with Keegan Matheson, who covers all things Blue Jays and baseball for MLB.com. The Blue Jays fairly busy in the days and yesterday for MLB trade deadline. I wanted to stick on in terms of, you know, the trades, because another guy we heard forever, and we've talked about him in our chats over the last couple of months, was Ken Giles. The injury obviously does complicate things. Was it smart for them to hang on, and how do you see maybe their return being impacted because a team now acquiring Ken Giles is getting him for essentially one playoff race as opposed to two?
Yeah, this is a huge story for the Blue Jays, because entering this deadline, this was supposed to be the deadline I thought that we would be talking about a few years from now as where it either really got kickstarted or where the Blue Jays fell short of what they needed. Because having, at this point in a rebuild or retool, having Marcus Stroman and Ken Giles to trade is an absolutely huge opportunity. And Ken Giles with a guy who, even though we talk more about Stroman, Giles could have brought back a legitimate, impactful prospect. And he could have offered an opportunity to take a bit of a swing on another upside guy like Woods Richardson. But getting him to this point now, you know, I know the reports have been that it's minor. The Blue Jays are not worried. But when you hear the words elbow or shoulder, this is an elbow, you have to worry with a pitcher who not only throws very hard, but leans very heavily on the slider. And the human elbow was not made to throw baseballs, let alone throw sliders. Those are tough on the body. So you hope, if you're the Blue Jays, and you hope for Ken Giles, because he's a guy who deserves this, that he can come back and be healthy and finish out this year. And then the Blue Jays can open it up to all 30 teams in the league, or all 29. Ken Giles on the market at the GM meetings, at the winter meetings. And there will still be a lot of value there, but teams are going to be very cautious, and they will need to see him throw some back-to-back outings, I think, down the stretch to be really comfortable with where this elbow was at.
Let's shift gears to what we saw on the field in Kansas City, a strong showing over three games. And I guess the guy at the center of it all was the man who's essentially wearing welding glasses instead of sunglasses. It is Bo Bichette. What did you make of his first three games? Six base hits, a home run. By all accounts, we knew he could hit, and apparently he proved that.
Outstanding debut for Bichette. And you see it with that home run where he's swinging quite literally off of his heels. He is going to take some massive hacks for the Blue Jays. And sometimes they'll look ugly. He'll be the one who ends up on one knee after missing a curveball, but that's fine. That's what makes him one of the most exciting young players in baseball, is because he plays at that high speed. He has an edge when he's on the field. And yeah, another hit that I think really captured who Bichette is that extra base hit he ripped down the left field line. His hands are so quick. His bat speed is so quick. And he's also able to adjust. So he can hit the breaking ball. He can catch up to the fastball. If it weren't for Vladdy, we would have been talking about Bo Bichette every day for the last couple of years. So in a strange way, he's come in a bit under the radar, a bit in the shadow of Vladdy. But this is a potential franchise cornerstone. And if you can get offense out of your shortstop position, that's a massive bonus.
I know they moved Eric Sogard. They didn't move Freddie Galvis. So with Galvis remaining on the team, how do you see them kind of moving Biggio and Bichette around, kind of that middle infield, because they're, we know that Montoya likes to get everybody in, but clearly Bichette is not up to sit. He's up to play.
Definitely. And that's where you start to see the lineup normalize a little bit, with Vladdy always at third, Gurriel always in the left, Bichette always at shortstop. And I think that's ideal. I mean, at earlier points this season, every day the lineup was different. Every day someone else was playing somewhere else. It was, it kind of had that, you know, taking turns vibe, which you don't love at the major league level. So right now I think that you will see Galvis mixed in there when he can. I know that Charlie will both want to mix him in, but also respect him as a veteran and try to get him in whenever possible. And thankfully his bat will allow that, since he's hit for a little power this year. But he's obviously going to scale back in that role. And that will be a big change for Freddy Galvis, because he's used to playing not just full-time, but I'm talking 162 games a year. He's one of those last real Ironmen in baseball who plays every single day. So he'll take more of a mentorship role, I think, in this, and be an extremely valuable resource, especially for Bichette, who still needs to take a few strides with that glove defensively. He's done a ton of work there the last couple of years, but still room to grow.
I guess last one for you as we wrap things up. We've been kind of ragging on some of the pitching prospect arms, but one positive story is Nate Pearson, who continues to shine at AA. What are your thoughts on the 22-year-old? And I guess, is it realistic to expect him to climb the organizational ladder here fairly quickly, because they are essentially looking for arms at almost every level?
Yeah, this is the one that the Blue Jays can really hope on as an ace, potentially. And that's a big word that you don't like to throw around, but it's about workload right now with Nate Pearson. He is still approaching 100 innings as a pro, despite being drafted in 2017. He missed so much of last year with an injury. And then this year, to build back up, the Blue Jays had him on a rotation where he'd throw two innings, then four or five. Two innings, then four or five. And frankly, it looks like it worked very well. And Nate Pearson, if you go and sit in the stands and watch him, watch what he can do on the mound, I think you can easily make an argument for him as one of the handful of best pitching prospects in the minor leagues right now. It's not just the 101-mile-an-hour fastball. It's that he can sustain it. He's big. He can use his legs. He can drop the curveball. The raw talent he had is extremely rare. But all he needs to do now is build up and work to a point where he's going to do that over, let's say, 160-plus innings. That's going to be a challenge, but he has the body to do it. And if he can, that raw stuff is ready for the majors, you know, earlier this year. It's well ready. Just a matter of workload.
Keegan, always fun to chat with you, pal. Enjoy the rest of your day. I know it's been probably busy for you the last week or so with radio hits, so maybe you get a bit of a break now. But enjoy yourself, and I'm sure we'll talk soon. Thanks, pal.
You got it. Talk soon.
You bet. Keegan Mathison from MLB.com.